presidents give State of the Union speeches. Here in Alabama, our governor presents a State of the State address every year. But today is your chance to check in on the state of Birmingham. It's been quite a year for the city. The long-awaited Railroad Park is open. A possible baseball stadium is in the works. And downtown redevelopment is starting to take off. But the city has had to make cuts in staff and services, and funding for transit is in limbo. What questions do you have? I'm Bradley George. Birmingham Mayor William Bell is my guest for On the Line, Ask the Mayor. We'll take your questions after the news here on 90.3 WBHM. You're listening to On the Line, Ask the Mayor on 90.3 WBHM Birmingham or 91.5 WSGN Ganston. Good afternoon. I'm Bradley George. Birmingham Mayor William Bell will be our guest this hour. He's a little tied up at the moment, and we hope that he'll be here in the studio joining us soon to talk about the state of affairs here in Birmingham. A lot to talk about, including downtown redevelopment, also funding for transit. That's something that's been in the news this week. And joining me is WBHM's Andrew Yeager. Andrew has talked about that downtown redevelopment portion of what's going on in Birmingham. He did a story about the Railroad Park, which recently opened, and he joins me now. Hi, Andrew.
Good afternoon, Bradley. Good to be with you. Downtown development is one of the topics that's been attracting a lot of attention in the last few months, certainly since the opening of Railroad Park this fall. It opened in September, and a lot is expected to come from it. And well, that's one of the things that we'll talk about this afternoon as we are here to ask the mayor.
And Birmingham Mayor William Bell is here. I'm going to give him a minute to get his microphone adjusted. And Mayor Bell was elected earlier this year to fill out the remainder of former Mayor Larry Langford's term. We're very happy that he's with us today. We welcome your questions for the mayor at 1-800-444-9246. You can also email your questions news@wbhm.org. If you're on Twitter, you can tweet your question to us. Just use the hashtag AskTheMayor. That's all one word, Ask the Mayor, and use the little tic-tac-toe sign in front of that, and we can find your question that way. Mayor, it's good to see you.
Well, thank you for having me.
And good to see you in person this time. I know we chatted on the phone
last time.
Glad to see you here. In the flesh. We're going to start by talking about transit. So for those of you who are calling, please keep your questions focused on transit. We're going to talk about a lot of things today. But if you've got questions about bus service, the proposed cuts to the service, some of the solutions that the mayor is proposing to those cuts, please give us a call at 1-800-444-9246, or you can email those questions to news@wbhm.org. Now, Mayor, this week the City Council approved $900,000 mm-hmm. to cover part of the operating expenses for the Birmingham-Jefferson County Transit Authority for November. You say there will be another tranche of money coming for December, and after that, no more money for the Transit Authority. Is that correct?
We're looking at other options that are available to us to make sure that people are not without transportation. The Transit Authority relied upon a commitment that was made by a former mayor to send about in addition that made up about $10 million based on some sales taxes that had been increased and a number of other things. The initial monies were to buy buses. It was for capital improvement. The federal government created the stimulus program, and they sent money to purchase buses back here to Birmingham. And the Transit Authority Board requested that instead of the money that had been promised to the bus system for capital purchases be used for operational purposes. That was agreed upon, but the problem was the city didn't have the money when it was agreed upon, and that mayor ceased to be mayor sometime August or September, and monies were never transferred, or the additional money. When I got into office, the finances of the city was in disarray. We had anticipated a $20 million deficit when, in fact, we had a $77 million deficit. The Transit Authority contacted us and indicated that a commitment had been made that the city would allow them to use the money for operational in that we were $3 to $5 million behind in what we had to pay in addition to monies to keep us current. I attempted to keep that promise, and I agreed that we would pay them everything that we had promised to pay them, and that there were some other things that we wanted them to do, a survey as to what they needed to do to streamline the bus system, bring in an outside audit, professional audit to look at the operations of the bus system, and a number of other things. The city met all of its financial commitments to the bus system based on the prior commitment. They then began to say, well, in order for them to stay at that same level, we had to pay them $900,000 a month for operations, and that was based on the increased amount that had been promised to them the year before. Well, we never promised that we would continue to give them that amount of money. My promise was to make up whatever had been promised to them the year before, for them to streamline their operation and reduce the cost and go from there. They have not reduced the cost, and they're still looking at the city providing some 10 to a little bit over $10 million a year, when in fact in past years we had only given them about $7 million a year.
So the three options that you're looking at if services cut: number one, expanding ClassTran, which provides right now provides paratransit service, but under this proposal it would expand to make up,
right,
to fill that gap.
Both of those systems are in need of revenue, and it's cheaper to run a ClassTran bus on those routes that don't have the ridership than it is to fund the regular transit system.
And the other two options, hiring private bus companies to provide shuttle services,
yes,
from bus routes that are cut to the routes that are still intact.
Right.
The third option is still working with the transit authority in some way, but service would only be provided in peak times, like rush hour.
You know, the biggest problem, we can cut to the chase on all of this. The biggest problem is that the city of Birmingham does not have the financial resources to be the sole financial sponsor of the bus system. This is the Birmingham Jefferson Transit System with about four or five municipalities, including Jefferson County, being represented on that board. The other municipalities are not living up to their fair share of the cost of the system. The system has not streamlined its operation when you look at the overtime costs and a number of other things. And the permanent solution to the transit problem doesn't lie with the city of Birmingham. It's in the state legislature. And we have not had any movement by the state legislature to provide that permanent funding.
Well, I wonder, though, about these options that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. If funding is cut, how do you think that they would be any more effective or any more reliable than the system as it is?
Well, we looked at the cost. I want you to get out tonight and pick any bus route and just sit there and watch the buses that drive by with one or two passengers on it, and wait for that bus to come back 45 minutes later. You'll still see one or two passengers. It is cheaper for us to pay for a cab ride for those passengers than it is to operate that bus just for those one or two passengers. The bus, the BJCTA had promised that they would streamline their operation. They would evaluate their bus routes to see which ones were most effective, what routes could be shifted to maximize the number of people. But it makes no sense to run a bus with two or three people on it. And we feel that we can come up with a better way to accommodate those two or three people rather than running a full bus service up and down that route. And that's what we're looking at.
That's Mayor William Bell of Birmingham. I'm Bradley George. This is On the Line on 90.3 WBHM. Right now we're talking about transit with the mayor. We'll talk about other things later in the hour, but if you do have questions about transit, give us a call at 1-800-444-9246, or you can email your question to news@wbhm.org. If you're on Twitter, you can tweet your question to us with the hashtag Ask the Mayor. This, as you said, it's a regional service. It's a countywide service. But if there are cuts in this service, if Birmingham stops providing funding, then that's going to affect transit users in Bessemer or Fairfield. Why should they have to endure these cuts just because Birmingham doesn't want to pay into the system anymore?
Well, as soon as Bessemer and Fairfield pay their fair share and come up with their portion of the money to help the system, and as soon as those other municipalities that Birmingham is picking up the load for do their fair share, then we'll all be better off.
Have you talked to those other municipalities about how much they pay?
No. That's up to the board to talk to them.
See, we have a question here. Are there plans? Well, this is actually, let me put it this way. I mean, we're talking about just kind of keeping up the base level of service.
Mm-hmm.
We're not even talking about any kind of long-term plan. I have a question here of somebody asking about putting some kind of rail system in.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think we need to do just to sort of fix whatever you need to fix with the transit system as it is, whether you make some changes, you just scrap BJCTA, or you make whatever reforms you want to make to that, and then you move on to whatever.
Again, Bradley, it's not up to me to make those reforms. It's up to the system and the state legislature. When was the last time you had a state legislature come up to talk about transit and what they're going
to
do?
We'll be very happy to talk to them.
Have you done so in the past?
We have done so in the past.
But what you get is nothing. Nothing happens out of that. And when the bus system is either threatened to shut down or runs out of money, everybody shows up on the city of Birmingham's doorstep saying, what are you going to do? And we have had such a financial crisis that we cannot continue to put money into the system, and the problems aren't corrected. The overtime is still high. We were told that when they get new buses that the overtime would be reduced because the new buses would not require as much maintenance. That has not been the case. There are elements beyond the city of Birmingham's control that people are asking Birmingham to step up and fill that gap. Well, when we take that $900,000 out of the city budget to send it over to BJTCA, that means that we don't have $900,000 to put into our police department. We don't have $900,000 to put into our fire department. We don't have $900,000 to put in supporting the school system or tearing down abandoned houses or reinvesting in our community. It creates financial problems that we just cannot get around if we continue to do that. And if you keep on doing things the same way that you've always done, getting the same results, you're not ever going to progress to the point that you can create a system that everybody will participate in and think is efficient and suitable for the public needs.
What do you think in terms of a dedicated funding source for the transit system? What's ideal? Is it some kind of fee? Is it an additional tax of some kind?
It would be a tax. It would be a tax.
A sales tax or?
No. You look at the gasoline tax would be the most viable method. If you talked in terms of sales tax, you have great fluctuations based on the economy, and you would still be faced with the same problem. A gasoline tax would be the most appropriate way. The legislature has killed many bills down there that would do that. They talked in terms of creating a different authority to oversee the system. That went nowhere. You have to have the ability to equalize the cost of transit all across the system. The Bessemer, the Fairfields, the Hoover, the Mountain Brooks, the Irondale, the Vestavias, all of the cities that would be impacted by it. There has to be an equitable way to fund it. Right now, there's not an equitable way. Again, everybody looks to the city of Birmingham to do it.
Let's go to the phones now. Vicki, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mayor.
Yes.
My question is this. I listened to you, and you said that you watch people get on the bus, and there's barely one or two.
Mm-hmm.
And my response to that is that because we have not had a viable transit system for almost 20 years, people found alternate ways to get around, to travel. But if there had been, I feel like more people would have ridden the bus. And, I mean, with a city as large as Birmingham, I think a mass transit system is like your viability of your city. I think more people would have ridden if it would have been available.
Vicki, you're absolutely correct. And, that's why since January 26, my becoming mayor, I've been to Washington, D.C. on four different occasions talking to various entities within the Department of Transportation as well as Senator Shelby and a number of administration people. There's money available in Washington, D.C. for both operational as well as capital to improve our bus system, but it requires a matching fund. And the matching fund is anywhere between $16 to $20 million that we could bring hundreds of millions of dollars in here. The problem is that the city nor the BJCTA or the county has authorization from the state legislature to levy the gasoline taxes because it's killed each year down in Montgomery. And until we get those matching funds, we'll never have the type of system that we all can be proud of, that people have confidence that if I get on the bus at 5 o'clock, I'll be at my destination within the time frame that they say 5:30 or 5:45. The reliability has always been in question. The quality of the buses has always been in question. And all of these things require money to make it run, and we have not gotten the authorization or the financial support out of the state legislature to do that.
Is stimulus money a revenue that could be used for that?
Well, the stimulus money was what we used to buy the 12 big buses and the 35 short buses. It's not for long-term operation. Those are one-time funds. We've got to have a recurring funding source. And Senator Shelby has indicated he will line up monies to come to Birmingham and the BJCTA, but we've got to come up with the matching funds to do so.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Vicki, thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, we're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about baseball and Railroad Park and downtown redevelopment. You're listening to On the Line, Ask the Mayor on 90.3 WBHM Birmingham. And if you have questions for Mayor Bell, give us a call at 1-800-444-9246. You can also email those questions at news@wbhm.org.
You can find out about the latest celebrity scandals anywhere, but where else can you find psychology that's not preceded by the word pop? And time to talk about what's really going on in the human brain. I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday for a look at the universe around us, the world inside us, how they fit together, and why it all matters. That's on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This afternoon at 1 on 90.3 WBHM.
From Nashville to New York.
I attended a rough school, Mr. Noir, at PS 89. Your voice had to command respect, otherwise guys would eat your lunch.
There's a tall guy wearing red socks crisscrossing the country.
He ran the 10 miles back home, bench pressed the rear end of the Ferrari, headed north through Wisconsin, high speed, through the small towns.
This show takes the prairie to the people every week.
A Prairie Home Companion, Saturday night at 5 on 90.3 WBHM.
This is On the Line, Ask the Mayor on 90.3 WBHM. I'm Bradley George. Birmingham Mayor William Bell is our guest, and we're taking your questions about the state of the city at 1-800-444-9246. You can also email those questions to news@wbhm.org. On Twitter, you can tweet your question to us with the hashtag Ask the Mayor. In this part of the program, we're going to focus on development, redevelopment in the city, especially in the downtown area and around Railroad Park. If you have questions about that, please give us a call. Again, the number is 1-800-444-9246. Now, Mayor, Railroad Park is open at long last, and
yes,
by all indications, extremely popular. If we went down there right now, we'd see all kinds of people having lunch and all kinds of things. Now it looks like a baseball stadium is in the works, possibly in that area. Or a few weeks ago, you signed a letter of intent with the owners of the Birmingham Barons for them to move back to the city from Hoover. We got a question from Brian on Facebook. Brian says that he owns a business that's adjacent to the Railroad Park. He says he was at a roundtable a few weeks ago where you were there, and he says that you promised that he and your office would be in touch with business owners in the area to discuss how a potential ballpark would affect them. Still wondering about that, though, and how would a ballpark affect those existing businesses that have been in that corridor for a while?
Part of the reason why I was late, we had a meeting with a group of property owners that will be directly affected in the area, and we begun the process. And I recall that individual. I don't know if his property is actually, or his business is actually in the identified area. I think he's somewhere around that area. But we met with property owners specifically to share with them what our approach will be. And as I explained to them, there was nothing for me to sit down and talk to them about until I was certain that we had some meeting of the mind with the Barron's organization, and we were taking things in a step-by-step approach. At each point of the way, you know, I had to go public in terms of sharing with the city council what we were proposing, and many people assumed that it was a done deal, and they were just sitting back waiting on us to, you know, come and say, well, this is what we want in terms of your property. Well, that step-by-step approach was to give the Barons a comfort level that we were serious about trying to bring them into Birmingham, and that we did have a funding mechanism to build the stadium. And then that gave them encouragement to go and start their negotiations, not just with the city of Hoover, but they are a White Sox organization. They had to have conversations there. We had to look at a number of issues to get us to a point where we could sign a letter of intent. Now, with that letter of intent, then the Barons are now in negotiation with the city of Hoover as to what their relationship will be from this point forward. The city of Birmingham does not have any involvement in those discussions itself. And we're waiting for the Barons to come back and say our situation is either secure or not secure with Hoover, and we're ready to move on or not move on. It would not have benefited anybody for us to go out there and start talking about land acquisition and things of that nature until we knew that we had a real deal.
Now, the stadium itself, it's going to be funded with an extension of the lodging tax,
right,
at least
mm-hmm.
in part. Now, there are a lot of municipal ballparks out there. Many have had cost overruns. In Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where I lived before I moved mm-hmm. down here to Birmingham, the city took on part of the cost of building a ballpark. They had to take over all of it because the owner of the ballpark had or the ball club mm-hmm. had some financial issues. How do you make sure something like that doesn't happen here?
Well, the development of the park will hinge upon us having the right developer and the right contractor and holding firm on the numbers that we put together. I don't have a crystal ball, and you know, oftentimes people want you to guarantee that you're going to do this within a certain amount of money. We feel that the financial allocation that we have for the ballpark is something that's doable. We have looked at other costs and expenses and revenues that can be applied toward the construction of the park. And if you've noticed, we always talked of the ballpark as being anywhere between $39 to $48 million dollars. And at the time, that was not including land cost. Well, there are some things that once we get the green light from the Barons, we will be able to say how we will deal with the additional land cost itself. We've taken all of that into account. And the only thing that I can share with the public at this time, we are aware that, you know, if you don't have tight controls, the cost can get out of line. But we're confident that we're going to maintain tight control over this situation and make sure that the money that we say it's going to cost, we come in either at or below that cost.
We're talking about development in Birmingham with Mayor William Bell. At 1-800-444-9246, you can call with your questions or comments. We're going now to Ian in Birmingham. Ian, you're on the air.
Hi, Mayor Bell.
Yes, Ian.
I want to say I think you're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you.
I really feel like we have a really forward-moving mayor now, which I really appreciate. But I wanted to ask, mm-hmm. Why is it, it seems to me that the big developments the city is discussing are mostly taken on by out-of-town design firms and contractors. And I know I work for an engineering firm locally, mm-hmm. and we're really hurting. A lot of the architects and engineering firms are really hurting right now. The recession has hit us in a very real way. And I think it would do a lot if you could, you know, if it was local contractors and design teams that were considered. I'll take my answer out there. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Ian.
And you do have a good point, and I'm trying to guard against that in my discussions with developers and contractors and things and organizations such as that. Let me give you an example of the Western Hotel that we're anticipating on building down in the Civic Center. Western has a strict set of guidelines as to the type of hotel that they will accept in order to put the Western brand on. And they will only do that with certain architects. Unfortunately, we don't have any architects in the city of Birmingham or even in the state of Alabama that have done business with Weston. And the architects that they have, I mean, they got a number all across the country, but nobody right here. So it would necessitate our going forward and dealing with an architect who is not from this area. But there are other projects, I mean, there are other portions of the architectural package that could and will be handled by local architects as well, in partnership with the recognized acceptable Western Hotel. And we're working that as part of our agreement with the developer. Any developer can step forward. I've talked to an Atlanta developer. I've also talked to a local developer about we've had them come in and make formal presentations over the last week on this project. We have not made a decision, but my goal is to get as many local businesses, companies, professionals involved in all of our projects across the board.
One of the concerns that sometimes you hear about a ballpark is, okay, well, if the Barons are out of town, then it's empty. If it's wintertime, out of season, then there's nothing going on in the ballpark. We got a question from Terry on Twitter who's wondering, can and will this stadium be adapted for other uses in the offseason?
We have an understanding in principle with the Barons that it will be available for certain types of event, but they would have to approve that. There's going to be a lot of investment in the ball field and the upkeep of the field, and, you know, they're not going to agree to have a tractor pull come in there and or anything like that. But
I've never seen a tractor pull in a baseball stadium.
but there are some other things that will go on there. You also are aware that we are planning on building the Negro Baseball Museum at that site as part of the stadium itself, so that we will have the ability to attract people year-round, not just during the baseball season itself. So we're moving forward on both of those.
You mentioned the negotiations that the Barons are having mm-hmm. with the city of Hoover. And we got a question from Mandela. I hope I'm saying your name right. And Mandela asks, the baseballer says, the baseball stadium is a great addition to entertainment in Birmingham. But my question is, Mayor Tony Patelos of Hoover was visibly upset by the team's move to Birmingham. And Mandela wants to know how Mayor Bell's relationship will be in the future with Mayor Patelos, because, as Mandela says, both cities are important in moving the region forward.
Tony is a personal friend of mine, and someone asked me or made the same statement that, you know, Tony Patelos was upset. Mayor Patelos said this. I say he did the same thing that I would have done had the shoe been on the other foot. Remember, the Barons ownership some 20-odd years ago moved out of the city of Birmingham while we were in the midst of negotiating building them a new park, and there was some hurt feelings behind it. It's understandable. No city wants to lose, but by the same token, the Barons are making a business decision. They're looking at what's in their best interest to grow their fan base, and that's the decision that they made. And what I've tried to do is to say this is what the city of Birmingham is willing to do and support, and I'm sure they gave either the city of Hoover that same opportunity, or they looked at what the pluses and minuses of being at the Regent Stadium in Hoover, and they made the decision that it would be better for them to be downtown.
You know, one of the great things about Railroad Park, and the reason it attracts so many visitors and so many different types of visitors from all over the cities, mm-hmm. it's free. I mean, you go up, you show up, and it's there, and it's a park, and there are all kinds of free events also. With a baseball stadium, you've got to buy a ticket, you've got to have money for a soda or mm-hmm. for beer or for souvenirs. For a lot of people in the city, you know, a night out at the ballpark might be out of reach financially. So how do you make sure that, okay, when you build this and the Barons are in the stadium, that it's something that's accessible to everybody, not just people with means?
Well, you know, I try not to get into class warfare that, you know, this group will benefit and this group won't benefit. What we have done is looked at stadiums across the country of the size and nature that we're planning on building. I think the most important part is that this will create job opportunities for wage and hour individual, part-time individuals that may not have an opportunity to have a job, and they will have access to those jobs in the community. We see this as something that benefits everybody, not just from an entertainment standpoint, but from an economic opportunity as well. We see the spinoffs that will occur by having that baseball park there to create other energies, just like the railroad park itself has created energy, that now people are talking about that area for growth and development that never thought about it in the past. And we anticipate that the ballpark will have that same benefit to everybody across economic stratas, one way or the other.
We're talking with Mayor William Bell on the line on 90.3 WBHM. If you've got questions about the mayor, specifically about new development or redevelopment in the city, give us a call at 1-800-444-9246. Again, 1-800-444-9246. You can also email your question to news@wbhm.org. We're on Twitter as well. Just use your hashtag AskTheMayor. And we'll find your question that way. Now, as I understand it, this development corridor that we're talking about around Railroad Park, it actually extends beyond I-65 and into Titusville. Is that correct?
Well, one of the things that we looked at was the old Trinity Steel site as a possibility to build a baseball park there. We have a conceptual map that would extend the whole green concept beyond the Railroad Park, both east and west. We're working long term to have some kind of connectivity with what's going on in the downtown area with the redevelopment of the Titusville area and getting into a corridor that will eventually lead us to connect green space up to the Red Mountain Park that's been under development at some time. We also have a plan that would go eastward to a Sloss Furnace that would have a phase two, phase three of the Railroad Park and eventually connect that up with what's going on out at Ruffner Nature Park, so that we have a band of green space that runs through the entire city and give people that opportunity to have recreational opportunities at different locations throughout the city of Birmingham.
I'm going to change subjects for a minute, and we've got a question from Talitha on Facebook, wondering about the city's changing its policy toward condemned property. She says mm-hmm. She drives by burned-out condemned properties in Avondale has for years, and nothing seems to be done about them.
One of the first things I did as mayor this past summer, we organized a program that's called One-to-One. And we started off in the North Birmingham area, and we've gone to just about every neighborhood to clean overgrown lots. Now, the abandoned houses became an issue because we, again, as stated before, we had a $77 million deficit when we came into office that we had to clear up. Then we had a shortfall on the revenues coming into the city for the next fiscal year. So we were in a cash-starved situation. But we were able to turn some things around, and we went back to the council back in late August, first part of September, to ask them to allocate $1.2 million because there are about 200 houses that we had approved in terms of asbestos and our ability to go in and knock it down without any environmental concerns. But we didn't have the money. The council delayed on the authorization of those monies for about a month and a half, almost 2 months. It wasn't until October that we actually got authorization from the council to spend that money. Well, then what we had to do was to go forward and put it out for bids so that contractors could bid on it, and then we award those bids, and they will go in and knock down those 200 houses. And if the houses that you see has a red tag on it, and there's another mark on there that shows that it's been cleared of asbestos, and it's on that list of 200 houses, they will be torn down within the next 30 to 60 days.
Something that the city of Detroit is trying to do is actually shrinking its size as mm-hmm. a way to deal with blight and condemned property and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you could ever see Birmingham trying?
Detroit, and I saw a special on that, what Mayor Bing is trying to do. Detroit is a sprawling industrial city that has many, many, many more problems than the city of Birmingham has. I see shrinking the size of government for the number of residents that we have, but I don't see shrinking the size of service that we give. Each day we're trying to find ways to improve the efficiency of service of the basic services that we deliver to the public. And it's my goal to do that in a more efficient way. About 72 to 73% of the city's annual budget go towards paying salaries. That's too high. To that end, what we've done, we've instituted a voluntary retirement program package that we've offered to the employees, and about some 238 employees have taken us up on that, and their last day of work will be sometime in December 2nd. That will give us a time to restructure city government, to downsize the operation of government, to make us more efficient with the dollars that we have.
And we'll talk a little bit more about that early retirement program a bit later, but now we're going to go back to the phones. And Ryan on Southside, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. I had a question that pertained to the structure of the ballpark.
Sure.
Have you considered making it a multi-use facility, say on the first floor, having spaces open for commercial use?
Yes. We're looking at how we can best utilize the space in terms of not the field, but the actual structure size for retail sales operation. I spoke earlier about having a museum there that would attract people on a year-round and not just during baseball season itself.
Okay.
All right. Thanks,
Brian. Sure. Well, we're going to take another break here. And when we come back, as I said, we'll talk about city finances and talk about the budget and talk a little bit more about that early retirement program as well. I'm Bradley George, and our guest today is Mayor William Bell, Birmingham Mayor William Bell, talking about the state of the city. If you've got questions for the mayor, give us a call at 1-800-444-9246. You can also email your questions to news@wbhm.org.
This time, when would-be arsonists tossed a match, instead of fanning the flames, reporters reached for the hose.
Would you stop being diplomatic for 5 seconds? Is the industry ready for the new world order, or is it not?
When dealing with the media, diplomatic is good, but direct is better. Hosts Brooke Gladstone and Bob Garfield slice through the chatter each week on NPR's On the Media.
Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock on 90.3 WBHM.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack the Tapper Brothers.
Left the keys in your car's ignition but still can't interest any thieves?
Donate it now through Car Talk's Vehicle Donation Program.
Call 1-866-789-8627 or go to WBHM.org.
You're listening to On the Line on 90.3 WBHM. I'm Bradley George, and today we're talking with Birmingham Mayor William Bell about the state of the city. We welcome your questions for the mayor at 1-800-444-9246. You can also email your questions to news@wbhm.org. If you're on Twitter, you can tweet your question to us. Just use the hashtag AskTheMayor. That's the little pound tic-tac-toe sign, and then AskTheMayor, all one word, and we'll grab your question that way. In this part of the program, we're going to talk about the city's finances and budget. So if you have questions related to that, that's what we're looking for right now. Again, at 1-800-444-9246. You can also email those questions to news@wbhm.org. Now, Mayor, as you were saying before the break, the city has offered early retirement packages to some of these employees. About 240 accepted the offer. As I understand it, this is a program that was aimed at workers with a certain level of experience and seniority with the city. Is that correct?
Well, not necessarily experience. It was across the board that any employee that had a combination of either having worked a minimum of 10 years to become vested in the city's retirement program, 55 years of age, and there were a couple of other requirements that, we pulled together. Most of the targeted group were individuals who would not lose anything financially in terms of salary by taking early retirement. Most of those employees that have been long-term employees, 30, 35, we even had one, I think, it was either 39 or 42 years. The reason they work is not for the salary, because they would make that or more in terms of their retirement stipend, but it was for the health care issue. It was cheaper for them to continue to work and receive city-paid health care, and that's why most of them stayed on. We were able to design a package that they would still get health care benefits in addition to their retirement funds. in order to take early retirement. And there were some other things that we did in terms of their vacation time, but their sick leave that gave them additional money and some other financial incentives that were within the law that we could offer them that helped create a very good package for them to say it is cheaper or is not as expensive now for me to go ahead and take my retirement.
So in some cases, the buyouts have created vacancies where the city will have to rehire someone. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's a cost savings to hire someone after you've offered a buyout to somebody who held that job?
Well, there are certain positions that are going to be critical. For example, in our engineering department, planning and engineering, we have some key critical positions that will have to be hired. We never said that we were going to give people a retirement package and we would not fill all of those positions. What we have said is that we're going to go back and restructure the operation of city government itself to find out what positions can be combined into one, what positions we can do without, and then look at how we can reduce the size of government that way. I'm looking at a target of a minimum of one-third of those positions will just go away. And then the other two-thirds we'll have to evaluate as to whether or not we can consolidate them or if we need to do something a little different. So each one of our department heads is taking a look at the restructuring of city government and there to present me a plan as to how we're going to go back and continue to make city government more efficient.
Right now, personnel costs make up about 70%. 72. Okay. So what would you have to do to really make a dent in that? I mean, I imagine these buyouts help with that a little bit, and then mm-hmm. not hiring some of these people that that accepted the early retirement. But in terms of, you know, if you want to get to that streamlined point where it isn't such a huge chunk of the budget, what's the long-term solution there?
Well, two things will happen when even if we hire someone to come into city government for those critical positions, they would not necessarily be making the same thing that the previous person made because of their experience and time and years and so forth and so on. So there'll be a reduction in the salary there in addition to those positions that we won't fill at all. Entry-level positions, if they're needed, start out much lower than what we would pay somebody who's been there 20 or 30 years. So all of those are efficiencies. And my goal is to get us under that 70%. The standard is that anything less than 70% of your payroll is within reason. When you get above 70%, then you're operating in a dangerous margin that the bulk of your money is going towards salary and benefits and things of that nature. So we're trying to get below that level.
I have another question about another part of the budget. This is the funding for nonprofit groups that the city funds. This is an email question from Jennifer. She says, I've seen in two articles that the mayor was going to help curb the debt of the city by cutting funds to nonprofits along with other things, and then that would be a temporary cut. Jennifer says she'd like to know if the mayor still intends to keep those cuts temporary and how much that'll actually affect the city's budget.
My goal, and let me go back to where we were. The 2009 budget was set at $425 million. We only had revenues coming in of about $348 million. There was no way we were going to meet any of the obligations that the city had made to nonprofits and other organizations. We ended up having to pare back the 2009 budget to get within the $348 million revenue stream that was coming into the city. And we had to do that by getting back to the basic services of the city. It is not the responsibility of the city of Birmingham to fund every nonprofit agency. It is the responsibility of the city to provide police service, fire service, garbage pickup, make sure the street lights are working, the traffic lights are working. And what I've said is that we are going to streamline and make sure we are efficient and effective at delivering those basic services. Now, as our revenue stream improved, because we had to do things like cut back on the employee longevity pay, we had to do a number of things that were proposed about holidays, and we actually cut out holidays. We eventually restored it because once we made all of those cuts and all those efficiency moves, we did start generating a positive revenue flow. To the point that we had about $6 million in additional revenue because of the cuts that we now could reallocate to restoring the longevity, restoring the holiday vacation time. Now, my goal is that once the city gets out from under this cloud and once we get stronger and we do have additional surplus revenue, then we'll go back and look at those nonprofit agencies. But until we get from under that cloud, it makes no sense for us to send money to a nonprofit when we have to lay off employees, to send money to a nonprofit when we don't have the equipment to deliver those basic services. And so that's what we're looking at now.
Let's go back to the phones. Frank, you're on the air.
Yeah, a few comments. The mayor is disingenuous. So number one, he don't even talk about his promising to have a forensic audit of the city. Really know.
Frank, we're doing that. That's being done already, Frank.
Excuse me, can I make my comment?
That's being done already, sure.
Number one, there's not a forensic audit. So for him to forecast all these items to be as they are cannot be valid or substantiated without a true forensic audit. That's one. Then you talk about the law department. He's talking about employees. The mayor has about 20-something law department members on his staff, but then he brings outside attorneys. If you give the money to the law department staff that are there, they are very quantifiable to do the kinds of jobs that the mayor say that he needs his cronies like Michael Choi and others to come in and do. That is so disingenuous. Let me say this to the mayor for the city employees. There's one thing this mayor can really hang his hat on, and that's going to be that he proposed a 10% cut for staff and said for about a month and a half there's nothing that the council can do. But the minute the council went in and found ways to subsidized, then he said 4%. Now they're at a medium where they didn't have to do the cuts that he forecast. Mayor, you're long on promises and short on fulfilling them. And you need to be real, real with these people in this city because you're going down the wrong road. And I say, one, implement the disparity study. Ask him about that, Mr. Interviewer. And two, when will that forensic audit be through? You interrupted me when I came with my question. So when will the forensic audit be through, sir?
Okay, thanks,
Frank,
for the call.
You know, I've been knowing you for some time, and I'm not going to get into back and forth with you on the radio. You can say what you want to say, do what you want to do. I know what I am, I know who I am, and I know what I'm about. And I'm ready to move on, Mr. Moderator.
Okay. What about the forensic audit, though? Can you address that, please?
We are having an audit done. In fact, we had to complete that audit in order to go to the bond market, and we presented that to the bond holders as well as the city council itself.
Okay. And now we're going to go to Hubert. Well, it'd help if I potted the phone up. Hubert, are you there?
Yes, sir.
You're on the air.
Thank you.
What's your question for the mayor, Hubert?
This is a hard question for you, Mr. Bell.
Yes.
Please, sir, as you know, the street money on the water river is going to happen anytime soon.
I'm sorry,
Hubert. Could you speak a little bit slower so we can understand you?
Yes, sir.
And go ahead, please, with your question.
As you know, the street money on the water river is going to happen anytime after the permission from Montgomery has already been given. On property owned by the University of Alabama, this street money is going to affect the drinking water of 200 persons on Birmingham. And up to now, the Birmingham Water Works is the only authority who has spoken against this. The Health Department, University of Alabama in Birmingham, and the other medical societies haven't spoken against this potential contamination of the drinking water for Birmingham.
I believe he's talking about the proposed coal mine in Cordova, which will be near the city's water intake.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I saw something for the first time the other day. I think there was a protest down on the University of Alabama campus. The university owns the property, and I don't know what actions the Waterworks Board has taken, but they have in the past sent letters. I don't know if they've done that in this particular case. As it relates to mine and mining impact on the city's water, and I'm assuming that they are monitoring that situation and they'll respond to. I don't know for a fact, though.
Okay, Hubert, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
You're listening to On the Line, Ask the Mayor on 90.3 WBHM and 91.5 WSGN. If you have questions for the mayor, we still have a few minutes left. You can email them to news@wbhm.org or give us a call at 1-800-444-9246. You can also tweet your question to us. Just use the hashtag AskTheMayor. Here's another question going back to the ballpark from Kyle. Kyle wants to know if the ballpark could be a joint venture with UAB, since UAB is talking about building a new football stadium.
We are looking at doing some things jointly in the area. UAB has not finalized their plans. They're going through a feasibility study, but if they do move forward, I'm certain that there will be areas of cooperation that we will be working on to benefit the entire area.
So you've been mayor now for about 10 months, mm-hmm. and you ran on a platform of your experience in government mm-hmm. over many years. But I wonder, in the time that you've been in mayor, what have you learned? What's new for you?
Not really too much of anything. I mean, the biggest challenge that I had was the finances of the city. I was under the impression that we were dealing with a $20 million deficit, when in fact we were dealing with a $77 million deficit, and we only had a short period of time in order to make the adjustment for that fiscal year, because the law requires that municipal government end up with a balance, and we had to make some drastic cuts, and we were successful. A lot of people didn't like it. A lot of people were upset, but I had to do what was right.
Here's another question going back to the transit issue from Twitter. Someone was asking, and I think probably working with Clastran probably answers this also, but why not work with other transit providers like Kid One to assist?
We're looking at all of those options, and we're trying to find the most cost-effective option to get people from point A to point B. And we're looking at any service provider that can come in and take over certain routes that will help the public in general.
You're listening to On the Line on 90.3 WBHM or 91.5 WSGN, talking to Mayor William Bell about the state of the city. And we're going to go back to the phones. We've got one last caller here, and this is Judy. Judy, you're on the air.
Thank you.
Hello, Judy, you're on the air.
Okay.
What's your question?
My question is, my question has to do with cost effectiveness
of what?
Of utilization of whatever type of transit or whatever you can do to help mm-hmm. patients get.
Judy?
Transit that you can do to help unemployed people get to Cooper Green Hospital for their patients, for their appointments.
I think that falls under the purview
You know, I'm just as concerned as the next person, but I have to look at my responsibility to provide basic services to the citizens of Birmingham within the purview of city government. When the city gets stretched in too many different directions, we end up of having financial misfeasance and a number of other issues. And I'm determined not to have that. I've instituted some more conservative measures. We can't fund everything that shows up on our doorstep. And those things that we do fund, it has to show a cost benefit to the citizens of Birmingham. And that's been my guiding principle for the last 10 months as mayor of the city of Birmingham, and I'll continue to do that. You're not going to find anybody that has a more compassionate heart than I do, but I also have to look at the limited resources and all the responsibilities that we have in order to deal with that.
Mayor, our time is up. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
And our show was produced by Tanya Ott. We had help today from Michael Crowell and Andrew Yeager. If you missed any part of today's show, we'll post the full hour later this afternoon on our website, wbhm.org. I'm Bradley George. Thanks for listening. Have a great afternoon.